Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to read, write, and discuss. Welcome to Epilogue with Angie and Marissa, where the end is only the beginning.
I'm over here getting down, man.
Okay, now I'm always outnumbered. Last time it was you and Dan outnumbered me, and I'm sure Rain sides with you all the time anyways. So I decided this time instead of groovy dubstep, I would do bad butt dubstep that you had.
Say what?
Bad A dubstep. But I don't know if that's the same one as the groovy dubstep. So I need new music. I got to work with that. I need some hard rock or something for me because, you know, I'm like a metal fanatic and hard rock. And, you know, let's get some of that going here.
Yeah, I'll add it to my list of things to do.
Oh, yes, please do immediately. This is Angie Martin with Epilogue.
And this is Marissa Oldham with Marissa Oldham.
With, you know, let me tell you something.
I know.
Guys, this is so funny, and I'm going to embarrass Marissa right now. So, you know, we start talking about 30 minutes before the podcast starts so that we can, you know, kind of get in the mindset and know what we're going to be talking about, like we ever
you
sound
better
like
not.
We know what we're talking about. Oh, yes, I am. So
you better not.
Come on.
I will unfriend you forever.
You mean when I went pee and you were talking to yourself?
I wasn't talking to myself. I was talking to Winnie.
I said, I got to go pee and I got to go get a soda because everybody out there that knows me knows I am not alive without my Dr. Pepper. Like, they should just hook it up to my veins or something. So I went pee, and the bathroom was, like, right by where I left my phone, and I hear Marissa out there just talking and talking and talking in her normal voice, and I couldn't hear what she was saying, and all of a sudden her voice got real high, and she goes, "Did you poop? Did you poop? You're hopping at me. Did you poop?" She's talking to her dog, and I'm on the toilet trying to pee. So it was one of those things. Embarrassing for both of us, see?
Okay.
Anyway,
well, you know, there's a little backstory to that. Winnie has been sick, and my dog hasn't pooped since Monday, people. So I'm a little bit worried.
Yeah. That's too bad you can't fly her full of laxatives or something, huh? What's a natural laxative for a dog? We have to look at.
I don't know. I gave her chicken and rice because that's what the vet said to do when she has these little tummy problems, and now she won't poop. So that's what that was all about.
Wouldn't rice stop you up? That's what you eat when you have vomiting and diarrhea. You're on the brat diet, bananas, rice, applesauce, and toast.
That's what was wrong with her on Monday. Exactly. That's what was wrong with her on Monday.
And so you stopped her up with the rice.
Anyway, it stopped her up real good. So anyway, enough about my dog's crapping problems.
Yeah, so we've got Scarlet.
We have other crap to talk about.
We have a lot of crap to talk about tonight. Scarlet Darkwood, she's a multi-genre author. Really interesting array of works. I don't know if you got to check her out before we started tonight, Marissa, but she writes everything from erotica to romance to goth to thriller to horror to paranormal. All that stuff. So why don't we get her on the phone here? She wanted to come on, or she didn't mind coming on early with us while we talk about our normal stuff. So let me get her. Hey, Scarlett, do we have you?
I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you just fine. How are
you
doing tonight?
Oh, good. Hey, doing great. You all have some very interesting conversation. And I would get the doggy checked out, so.
You know, maybe you should tell the reality TV people that. we can get our own show.
Oh, God. God help the world
if
that ever happens.
Awful. Oh, my gosh. That would be the end of the world, I
bad
think.
Bad enough that we have a podcast.
Who gave us the rights to that?
Blog Talk Radio?
Yeah, I have to pay them, don't I? Okay. Scarlett, we are so glad that you've joined us here tonight. We were just talking about all the different things you write. And if you don't mind, we'd love to get a short introduction to yourself and your works. And then we're going to move on to a couple topics, and then we'll get back to your interview.
Oh, absolutely. The interesting thing is how I got my pen name, and I got it through putting in Sarah Palin's name in a goth generator name thingy.
Oh, no way.
And it came out Scarlet Darkwood, and I thought, I like it, I'll take it. So that's what I did.
I think it's
so that's how the name came about. It is, and I thought I wanted to make one pen name count because I thought I don't have the energy to keep up with 50 different pen names for 50 different genres. So it may not make readers very happy because I understand there are purists out there, but I just wanted to make the name count because I may have stories that fall into different genres, and so that's how everything fell into place that way.
Oh, that is so, that's really cool, actually, because I've heard a lot of stories behind pen names, and Marissa, you have too, but I've never heard one about using a name generator. So I'm curious. I'm going to put in Marissa's name into a goth name generator
here. Yeah, a goth name generator. Yeah, I had a website long ago called Wicked Wares, and it was just some kind of fun little, even though I'm not a goth person, truthfully, I'm about as prudish and vanilla as they come, but I thought Wicked Wares sounded fun, and I didn't want to use my real name for that. So that's how all of that came about. So when
that's
I started
so
writing,
cool.
I thought, I'm going to, use that name. So that's what I've done.
So, Marissa, your name is Azora Widowess. Do you kill all your husbands? Is that why you're not married?
Yep. Gosh, now you know my secret.
Oh, well, mine's kind of perfect. I'm Amethyst Oddman.
Oddman, Oldham, yeah.
I am Oddman, and Amethyst is my husband's birthstone, so it kind of works, right?
Florida.
That's kind of fun, actually. I like that. I love that. I'm so glad you told that story. And I love
you.
Want to
know what's
noticed...
funny?
Uh-huh.
I got something funny for you. Rain was telling me last night that we came up with the title for Remember the Stars by using a generator, and I don't remember that, but apparently we did.
Did you really? I wonder how common that is.
I don't think I've ever done that before, but I don't remember doing it. But she swears up and down that that's how we came up with the title for Remember the Stars.
Wow. Have you ever done that, Scarlett, used a generator for your title?
No, I haven't. That sounds pretty neat. What's so interesting, and most people may not know this, is that Scribner actually has a name generator built into it. Kind of interesting.
Does it really? Wow.
Yes, I can get Scribner to work for me.
What now?
I couldn't figure out Scribner. It must be because I'm a dumb author.
Oh,
sorry.
No,
I had to.
You're a stupid indie. Just so for our new listeners and for you, Scarlett, we have a slight delay on this podcast, and I think we say this about every week. It's the only thing about our new podcast setup, because if you followed us before, you know that we recorded our podcasts and we would take like 4 hours to edit them and then we would upload them. And so now we get to do it live. We get to take calls. We really love this, but there is that delay. And so sometimes it kind of sounds like we're talking over each other. We're really not. And so just if everybody can bear with us as usual on that delay, that would be fantastic. We really don't need to talk over each other.
Well, that sounds good to me. And, and I'm open to discussing whatever the topic is of the day also. It doesn't have to be a formal scripted interview. So I'll be glad to. I'm an opinionated person. I have no trouble sharing my opinion. I'll try to be nice.
Yes, we love opinions on this show. Well, I guess I'll talk about the topic of the day real quick. And, you know, we can, it, you know, we don't have to discuss it the whole time. I definitely want to interview you more because what we've learned so far in like 5 minutes is fascinating. So the topic of today, I don't know if my listeners out there have seen my live video today where I just rambled. Keep in mind, you know, I'm disabled, so I'm on pain medication and muscle relaxants, and I just taken one of each right before I did that. At least it didn't turn out like Selena Hopkins' video did with her later claiming to be a whiskey. But, of course, it messed with my mind. Every now and then I kept losing my words, so I apologize for that. But I wasn't trying to be all dramatic like others. But there was, you know, we all know about Cockygate. Scarlett, are you kind of up to date on Cockygate also?
You know, when it first came out, I swear I spent like every hour of the day that I could reading about it. So I am super saturated with Cockygate.
You are
I also read your post about some of the updates too. It's like authors have fallen down a rabbit hole. We just wanted to write, and now this.
I know, and that's kind of like, you know, I got to the point today, like I said on my live video, I'd had a really bad day already. Not a bad day necessarily, but just like little things that are big things that happen that kind of just like pissed me off already. And then I find out that Michael Scott Earle, who is a fantasy author, has decided to go out and trademark four common things in fantasy. And I'll tell you how common they are. One of the things he's trademarked was used in a title of a book back in 1981. I mean, these are not new titles that he's come up with. These are things that have been used over and over again. So I just want to read real quick so that everybody knows in case you didn't get a chance to read it. This is what Michael Scott Earle said, and this is what kind of set me off and set other people off and said, you know, Cockygate has done so much damage, and honestly, I don't think we've seen the full ramifications of what's going to happen, but people like Michael Scott Earle are jumping on that bandwagon. So he wrote, here is some BS. One of my friends is a very successful romance author, we know that's Selena Hopkins, who has a word written in a particular font on the front of her books. It identifies her brand, and she's worked for many years to cultivate a readership that loves her stories and quality. So if we take the first part of that, number one, she pretty much copied the same font as V and Penelope for Cocky Bastard. They wrote Cocky Bastard before her. Her original cover for her first cocky book is identical in every way to their cover. And she has not worked for many years to cultivate the readership. I think she just got published in 2016 was the first time she published herself. So that's not many years, you know, not like the people she's going after who published before she did. He wrote, over the past year, she's had countless imitators use that word with that font on their books to protect herself. She's filed a trademark. And we know that font does not belong to her. It belongs to Set Sail Studios. And she trademarked the word cocky in that font, which is a trademarked font. So we know that's wrong, too. And there have not been countless imitators. Just because someone uses cocky in a title does not mean they are imitating you and or stealing from you. But this is how she views it. And, in fact, there is a picture going around Facebook, and I wish I could find that. I need to find that. If somebody's listening and you have it, send it to me, please. But it literally shows rows and rows and rows of currently published romance books that have the exact same layout with the exact same similar script font for one word and then the type font for the other word, and it's got the author's name pretty much in the same place and the same picture on the front, you know. And there's like all these, she did not invent this, and it's not hers to claim as she's the only person that's ever done it, because like I said, she copied Vi and Penelope. Michael goes on to say, now those shady authors who have been trying to rip her off are crying foul to the masses of indie authors. There's a witch hunt going on because, quote, it's not fair that she gets to trademark that word that she used to create her brand, unquote. We all know now that she never even used the word cocky in her series title until around the time the trademark was granted. Not filed for, but granted. So she lied in her trademark application, which is against law. It's pretty much perjury is what it's considered. This is what got everybody going. The argument is stupid, but then again, most indie authors are stupid. So I'm not surprised that the angry mob is grabbing the pitchforks.
Yeah, well. what do you even say to that? I mean, to lump a group of people and say that we're all stupid is stupid, because I can vouch for at least one indie author I know that isn't stupid. You know, you're highly intelligent, Angie Martin. Most of the authors I talk to are highly intelligent. You know
right?
What I mean?
Everybody's a pro.
You can't be stupid and write a book.
That's exactly what
I
said in my video. You can't. And the fact is, he is an indie author himself.
Well, he just called himself stupid.
Well, he said most. So I think he was excluding him, and that there's apparently some groups of a group of authors that consider themselves to be kind of high and mighty. They have formed these groups, and they are telling other people that you absolutely have to trademark your titles, words in your title, your series names. You know, they are perpetuating all the problems that were started with Cockygate. And his post is so misinformed and unfactual that, I mean, where do you even begin with all the misinformation there?
It's just more crap for our readers to have to deal with.
I agree. Scarlett, what are your thoughts after hearing that?
I think it's pretty disheartening to have an indie author say indie authors are stupid. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous. And that does say a lot about him for saying that. There is one thing that I wanted to point out, or maybe to bring up, and Angie, or maybe it was Marissa, I think you had an author, you had shared a video of an author who was trying to really confront Felina and said, you know, I've used cocky in my book and I've used it all over,
mm-hmm.
come after me. Now, I bought this author's book to support her, not Felina, but the author. And
it was
Susan T.
Penny Haversnatch, what she wrote it under.
Yes.
And
I
she wrote
so.
It.
Yeah,
gone.
No, you're right. That's the name.
Yep,
So I went on ahead
wrote a
and I got. Yes. And now the only thing that got me is when I saw, and this isn't meant to be a criticism, it's an observation, but the word was a derivative. It was K-A-H-K-E-Y, and I thought, oh, man, you know, why didn't she use cocky, C-O-C-K-Y? Now, here's the thing, as I started thinking about it, the problem is like it or not, Felina technically right now has the trademark on cocky. So if Penny did that, she might have a problem until this gets resolved, and it's going to take...
But here's the thing. Yeah, right now, she does have the trademark, but authors are still allowed to publish books with the word cocky in the title or the series name, because the court ruling on June 1st stated that she basically can't go after Hera Crescent, you know, with a restraining order and make her change the title of her book. And so right now, and Amazon responded to the Romance Writers Association, RWA, and said, hey, we're going to stop taking those books down. We're going to reinstate all those books that we took down. And they did that pretty much overnight. So you can still right now publish, but that hadn't happened yet when she published her parody book. And that was Susan Tisdale is the name of the author, and she doesn't mind her name being said because she came out on video and said, hey, I'm the one that did that. Come after me. I can fight you too, you know. But you're right. You know, if you do publish a book right now and it's got the name Cocky in it, and let's clarify, it's a romance series is what the trademark actually says, but she's going after people with Cocky in the title also, which I highly disagree with, but other people have told me no, she can still do that. But it is only romance. So we talked today a little bit about maybe some of us thriller writers, because I'm not romance or erotica, but yeah, I'm a thriller writer. Maybe some of the thriller writers, we need to write a book called Cocky Killers. And every single person writes a story about a cocky serial killer. And people are pretty serious about, hey, let's do this and let's give those proceeds to the people that need financial help to fight the copyright. She could never come after us either because it's in the thriller series. So I could use cocky all I want to. I could name a book Cocky, 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 Cocky. She can't do anything about it. Because I'm not
as long as it's a thriller.
As long as it's not romance, good.
Well, I thought about writing. I swear to God, and I started the story. I can use it for my Break for a Quickie collection, but I actually started the story and called it and wanted to call it Cocky Bassett, and put it under pets. About a girl who loses a dog and, you know, finds a guy and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I thought, you know, I was so tempted to do that. But anyway, I do have
that
the beginnings of the story. But, yeah, that would be my contribution.
You know, there are so many people that are still putting together anthologies. Even if you didn't do that on your own, you could probably hop onto one of those anthologies where they're supporting the people that need the financial assistance to fight her in court. You know, I was reading today that it could take between $100,000 and $1 million to fight a trademark. I mean, this is not a small deal at all.
I think my question would be to the trademark office, because if you all can find the link where Kevin Newper did an interview explaining all how this all could have happened. He said the problem is when they go to a trademark office and they're looking at the request, you know, it's not like you have two lawyers in there as adversaries saying why it should be approved and the other why it shouldn't. It's just, you know, usually it's considered non-adversarial, and so somebody who wasn't thinking mistakenly approved that, and it's created a huge issue. Now you've got everybody following suit. But he said, you know, he said that's the problem with the trademark thing. And he said it could take about 18 months to really officially clear this up, because technically right now, yes, if Susan or Penny or I or anybody put something in the romance with Cocky in it right now until it's taken away, she could technically come after you.
She could, but with that court ruling, I would really hope that they would say they would put a stop to it immediately.
Put a stop to it,
you know, with that ruling from the judge. Yeah, definitely.
I wonder if the trademark office is going to be careful now when they start getting things from authors. You know, at some point you wonder if you don't start seeing a trend and they start to wisen up and go, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't somebody – sorry, Ann.
You're fine.
There we go with that delay. Well, that's what I was saying during your live is, can't somebody contact – one of the managers at the trademark office and let them know that this is going on, or somebody already done that.
That's right. Yeah, and I saw that comment, and, you know, I had so many comments coming in. I was trying to keep track of them all, but, yes, I wanted to address that today. So Kevin Newper is trying to get trademark laws changed. He's trying to get Congress to get in on this and start seeing that this trademark law issue, it's an issue. It's Lena Black today, I just love her. I met her through CockyGate. I've met most of the people that I know, or not most, but, you know, a lot of people that I talk to daily I've met because of CockyGate, which is great. But Lena said that this is a violation of the First Amendment, essentially, is what she's doing. She is inhibiting our ability to use a word, just one word. And nobody has a problem with her trademarking the Cocker Brothers or Cocker Brothers. Nobody gives a crap. You know, if Marissa Wynn trademarked the Falling series, nobody would care. But she trademarked a single word for the series and is going after people who can't afford to fight her necessarily. And she's going after them if they even have it in their title. She tried to go after a friend of ours for having the name Jake in her book. She said, well, you stole that name from me. That's in my book. And Jake. It's like, whoa.
I got a cousin older than her books with the name of Jake.
Yeah, I have a Jake in one of my books, but I'm Thriller, so what is that, you know. I mean, these are really stupid, petty things that she is doing. But, oh, my gosh, I forgot my point. This happens, guys. It's a violation of the First Amendment is essentially what it boils down to, because she is trying to stifle us from using a single word that is a common word. But, you know, there's so much more behind all this and going on with all this. And, you know, you brought up Kevin Newper. For the listeners who don't know, Kevin Newper has been a warrior, an angel, I mean, a god, whatever you want to call him. He is incredible. Kevin Newper used to be a trademark patent attorney, and he retired from that. He was, you know, one of the top in the country. Retired from that and started writing romance novels. I mean, how did we get so lucky? Seriously, guys.
Right.
What are the chances of that? So he filed a challenge against the trademark, and that's where everything kind of stands right now. We're waiting for the trademark to be overturned, and I think it will be. I really think it will be.
Yeah,
well,
and I'm just hoping the trademark office will be aware that to stop authors from doing words.
And I think that's where his challenge to Congress and trying to get things set, you know, so that this won't happen again is really going to be valuable in the fight against things like this. But in addition, you know, Selena is constantly telling people. I mean, you can see it in pretty much any post that she's made, maybe taken down, but there's screenshots of everything. I mean, you do something like this and you're going to get screenshotted. Nothing is gone forever. But she keeps saying that I fought hard for that trademark for over 7 months and blah, blah, blah. Well, for the people who don't know, it normally takes 7 months to get a trademark approved anyways. And she didn't fight crap. They just looked at it, approved it erroneously, but they just approved it. They went based off her application. They are overworked, underpaid, not enough staff, and this is what happens. And we as authors didn't know, oh, my gosh, in addition to writing and marketing and, you know, meeting new readers and, you know, networking with authors and all this other stuff, that we've got to follow the trademark applications. Because if we'd known that, this would have been stopped. She never would have gotten the trademark to begin with. So that's – she didn't fight for anything is my point. And she's telling everybody how hard she fought.
Well, it probably cost her a pretty penny, but apparently that, you know, pretty penny to her is a lot more than it is to me, or you know what I mean. But anyway, I wish that we could move on from this and that it would all get resolved in our favor. But, you know, every day or at least once a week, something new happens, and it's getting a little tiresome. I'm over it.
Yikes. I agree. It's not only tiresome, but it's scary where things are headed.
It is scary.
You know, you've got this other author who now it's hitting the fantasy genre. You know, before it was romance, and it was like, okay, if we can contain it to one genre, it's easier to fight. You know what I mean? And then it went to Lit RPG, which is role-playing games. It's a book based on a role-playing game. Someone tried to trademark that, and then you got the company in Great Britain that's trying to trademark Rebellion, and then you've got, you know, this guy now in fantasy sci-fi who's trying to trademark these four things, and him and his group of
lackeys are telling authors that they need to trademark everything. Yeah, where does it end? It doesn't seem to end ever. And it feels like, you know, there, it's only like this small group of bad apples that is trying to make it so difficult for everybody else. So I'm not sure what else to say. I think everybody's kind of worked
up about it. I say we get on with Scarlett's interview.
I agree. Scarlett, did you have any last-minute things you wanted to say about Coffeegate or this trademarking thing?
I think you're right. I think if the trademark office itself doesn't have some hard and fast rules on when authors are obviously trying to trademark things, we're going to have a problem. I don't think single words should be allowed. It should be the name of a series or something. Of course, I know there's a lot of one-titled books, but again, I don't think you should be allowed to trademark probably even a title. I mean, maybe it needs to be like copyright. You know, I don't know. I don't know how they'll work that out.
Yeah.
But, you know what? Everybody
takes the
words.
Yeah. Sorry, that delay.
Oh, no, that's okay. But
keep
yeah,
going,
I think
keep
something
going.
Like that. I don't know if Kevin Newper is somebody who can help pose all that in a nice, tidy way. I did buy one of his books, though, to support him. So, you know, if anybody hasn't,
yeah,
I would go buy one of his books.
Absolutely. That's a really good statement. I don't think we've said that before. But, yes, go buy Kevin Newper, one of his books. Go support him. He's phenomenal. Go buy Cocktails, the Cocky Anthology or Cockiest Anthology, whatever it is. That is, they're donating all their funds, all their proceeds to the people that need financial help with their lawsuit or if they have a lawsuit. But I agree. I think it should stop with series names only, but it shouldn't be like a one word. If it's like a series and it's a one word series name, then it should be like Marissa has the Falling series. You know, she can't, I don't think she should be allowed to just trademark Falling as a series name. Like, she would have to do the Falling series. Like, it would
right.
have to be a whole shebang or nothing at all. That's just my thought. If you're going to trademark something, do the series name, but do the whole thing. But no one word. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Agree.
So, yeah, really great point, Scarlett. I appreciate you bringing all that up. You know, it helps sometimes to hear from new people to see things in a different light and kind of explore those things that maybe we haven't quite thought about yet. So I appreciate you joining in on that conversation with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
But I want to get on to you because really we're here to promote you. We want to hear about you. Our listeners want to know all about your books and your life as a writer and all that fun stuff that, you know, you want to share with us. So I see here that you write, you know, we talked about earlier, you write in many different genres. Can you kind of tell us what brought you to that point where you decided, you know, one genre is not enough, I'm going to do all these different genres?
I think with me, I know there are authors who enjoy writing one particular story, but I think as a creator, I think,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think it's good to try different things. We get bored with one thing, and sometimes I think things are done to death. So
yeah.
though the readers may not like it, I figure if I could try to establish myself as an author that people could pick and choose, like I don't like erotica, but gee, I might like this romance book, or I might like
mm-hmm.
a thriller book. The trick in the future at some point will be trying to get enough body of work to represent each of them well enough. That's a lot of writing. But,
yeah.
You know, right now it's not heavy. And erotica is probably the heaviest, or erotic romance. But, you know, if I could get, you know, three or four more books in some different areas, I would hope that people could say, you know what, I like this author. I want to read another type of her books. I mean, and that
yeah.
I would be somebody that they would trust enough to get a, you know, that they can go for an entertaining story. So that's my hope.
pick up a horror book of yours and it's not going to be filled with erotica, is what you mean, right?
Exactly.
Like, they can trust you. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, if I'm writing a horror book, you know, Death by Design, that's clearly not erotic when you look at it. You know, Escape from Purgatory, that's actually a clean romance. There's no sex in there at all.
That's a good question to ask you.
No sex in there, yeah. And Words We Never Speak has, it has some spicy scenes, but it's very tamped down and very, I guess, more sensually written. And then I think the one that probably throws people the most is my Break for a Quickie collection. There's Tech Support,
yeah.
Hard Way In, Fun with Dick and Peter, and Naughty and Nice. Here's the thing with that, though. In the spirit of erotica, there's not a problem to solve in these books other than how am I going to get laid. That's really the author's, the character's dilemma. And, you know, if somebody's looking at it for something very cerebral or, you know, there's an itching problem to solve, you're not going to get it in the Break for a Quickie selection. Truly, for those erotica shorts, they are meant to be a fun, frivolous, funsy read. Sometimes I don't want to think when I read. I just want to enjoy it for the moment, especially erotica. My other books,
yeah.
Pleasure House and the Pleasure House Tales, I mean, those are a little bit deeper. You know, those are different.
So those have more of a storyline along with the erotica is what you're saying.
Yes, yes. Pleasure House is more about the journey and the experience with romantic elements into it. And the House Tales are derivatives of a central universe, the house, which is supposed to be an insane asylum is what it's supposed to be. And there's one side of it that is specifically geared for learning about pleasures of the flesh.
Oh,
and
that's
how to learn about that, unleash that. Yeah, it's that's what the whole thing is. And when I did Pleasure House, I was happy to move on to write other books. And a friend said, well, you know, you really need to kind of get some body of work out there kind of quick. And I'm thinking, okay, great, I'm not a quick writer. So I did the other House Tale stories to try to get some other work out there. And, you know, I don't know, I kind of wrestle with myself on that. I'm thinking, should I have done it? Should I have not done it? So I don't know. I think it's something I'll always question myself about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well,
okay. Awesome.
You know, I think as long as you're happy with what you write, that should be the bottom line for us as authors. You know,
yeah.
We want people to love our books and buy our books, but you know, if you're happy with the stories you created, then I wouldn't doubt yourself.
Exactly.
Well, I think I've kind of come to that conclusion that, hey, you know, you created some different stories, and I actually have about two or three or more in mind for that collection, and that I'm ending it all together. I'm not writing any more House Tales books. But,
yeah, no.
No,
I think you're right, Marissa. You know, we have so many sub-genres now that we didn't really have before the indie author explosion is what we'll call it. There's so many mashups now. And Marissa, would you agree that I kind of write mashups? I mean, you've got thrill, mystery, suspense, some romance.
Yeah,
you know,
even though you don't like to say that you write romance, I do. That's one of my favorite parts of your books.
Yeah,
I'm
a
romance author.
so,
you know, the romance
know,
in your books kind of draws me to it, but that's not the main theme of your books. You do have
exactly all
these things going on.
And so, like, kind of what, Scarlett, you're saying is that, you know, I kind of like to incorporate a lot of different things. I'm not a romantic person by nature. I'm just not. You know, to me, date night is go get some sushi and watch people court and go to bed. You know, it's not this big thing. I'm not a romantic person, but I do like to include some romance in my books, you know, if there is a love story to be told, that is. But, you know, you get so many different genres within one book, and then people don't know how to classify it. It was the problem that I run across. You know, one person says, oh, that's totally a thriller. You know, it scared the crap out of me. And the next person says, oh, that was too romancy. You know, so you really can't please everybody. You have to write it the way it's meant to be written, and the way that's going to make you happy as a writer. So I don't ever go into a book and say, this is what my genre is for this book, or these are the subgenres I'm going to include.
It's just how it comes out, because those characters are telling me what to write. And I imagine that's kind of the same way for you, Scarlett.
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, what people, what readers don't realize, and it's not their job to realize that, but I think what people don't realize is that, you know, when we authors start to write a story, we have a way that we want that presented and the way that we want it to flow, what we want it to do. Now, you know, as an author, you want to make sure that there's not plot holes, that it's as written as well as it possibly can be, and that you're conveying whatever it is that's supposed to flow and that you want to share. But I think it's, you know, I don't think readers realize, you know, that sometimes when we get a story in our head, it's kind of created in such a way in our minds, even on a subconscious level, of how we want it to start and how we want to present the information and how we want it to end. And now I know for me, and I'm telling on myself here, I don't write things in such a compelling way that it grabs the reader out of the gate sometimes. If I had to say there's a flaw in something I do, I struggle very hard to make those opening paragraphs gotchas, because I'm kind of one of those, I want to kind of present it little by little by little by little. And today's modern audience, no matter what, how your story's supposed to flow, try to, you know, I hate to say it, really work it in such a way that you can grab the reader out of the gate. That's not something that I do naturally, and I sometimes suffer for it, I think. That's my only thing with that.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way when it comes to my my first book in my Falling series. Is, you know, I'll tell people, it's a little slow going, but I have a reason for that. You know, I feel like you have to build a story. So I kind of have that same kind of feeling about my first book, too, where I don't feel like it grabs readers out of the gate. Although I did try to put that, a prologue? It's a weird prologue, but I think it's a weird prologue anyway. But I feel that same way. Like, well, I'm glad you don't think it is, but I do.
Okay, but so then I've got a question. Why do you think it's weird?
I don't know. That's a whole other story.
I'm just curious.
Prologue
is such a hot topic.
Agree. Yeah, I agree with what Scarlett is saying and how she feels. Like, I don't feel like I am the best at grabbing the reader out of the gate, but I think that my stories do have a lot of depth, and you just have to get, you know, especially the Falling of Love, I feel like you just have to get through those first few chapters, but there's a reason I do it, you know, and I'm not sure that everybody understands our reasoning because they're not in our heads, you know?
Yeah, but you know what? I'm going to totally disagree with you because I'm thinking of the first lines of a lot of your books, and no, I think you're totally wrong. And I think a lot of your readers would disagree with you as well. So there you go. Done.
Well, you're allowed to argue. That's fine.
But, yeah, Scarlett, you're absolutely right. You know, try to grab that reader, you know, get them into the book and, you know, take them on the ride wherever the story takes us. Because, really, I don't feel like I dictate my stories. There's, you know, in my first book, False Security, I had a 2-month-long argument with a character in the book because I didn't have a last name for him. I just had the first name, Jonathan, and you know, people that have read it are going to know what I'm talking about. But I had a 2-month-long argument with him because he wanted his last name to be the same as another character in the book. And I said, no, you can't have that last name. That's someone else's last name. And he kept coming back and saying, no, that's my last name. That's my last name. And after 2 months of disagreeing, I was like, okay, fine, whatever. And then that revealed the whole plot point of them having the same last name. And that wasn't there before. And I almost didn't go with my gut. You know, my gut was saying it's the same last name, and here's why. So you have to go with your gut. You have to go with what the story tells you. And if the story takes you to mystery or suspense or romance or whatever it is, you kind of just follow it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, while I think a lot of authors say the characters speak to them, I think when I took Holly Lyle's writing courses, or some of her, I guess, some of her courses, she said, you as the author have total control of the story, you know, so but do watch out for your mind running wild and all of a sudden you're having all kinds of plot lines and characters and everybody raising their hand going, oh, me. And, yeah, so I think, you know, I think instead of characters talking to me or telling me, I think I do get flashes of insight and inspiration. And I think a lot of that is just getting your mind going through the mental creative exercise. It's kind of like my mother said. She said, you know, it's probably like playing the piano or playing a sport. The more you do it, the better you get.
Absolutely.
And I think there is some truth. There's some truth to that. I am actually stepping way outside my genre, and I'm writing more right now a science fiction fantasy type book, which I enjoyed that genre when I was younger. I don't so much anymore as an older person. And the only reason I'm writing this book is because I fell in love with the cover produced by Jaya here. She is a great cover designer, and she had one of these artsy covers, and I fell so in love with it. I bought it, and I said, Jay, when I'm finished with the story, will you finish with the, you know, whatever I will need to put on the cover? She said, not a problem. Just let me know when you're ready. And I have never done that before. I may not do that again because I'm thinking, oh, man, I got to get the story written. But it's actually, it's going to have some eroticism in it, more of the sensually written scenes, kind of like in Words We Never Speak. But it's kind of going to be, as we had talked about earlier, one of those mashups. I mean, some of it's going to be something from metaphysical mythology. Some people don't believe the setting that I'm putting this on existed. It's about Atlantis before the last destruction. And it's actually this alien from another constellation is looking down and he sees a woman making love with her partner and he's like, I need to go find out what it's like to be human and where did they come from and why are we not talking about humans? And so he goes down to experience what that's like and to find this girl, and then he gets caught up in the politics of the day that led to Atlantis's final destruction. And every book I had read, it talks about people finding secret codes, finding lost treasures, finding this, finding that. I think I wanted a story that ideally would take you into the heart of what was going on, and with it being an advanced race, probably a lot like we are today, you may say, well, I don't see a lot of difference in it than reading a modern novel, but you have to realize this was an advanced race, and that was thousands of years ago.
Wow.
So,
you know, I don't think there's
kind of my new venture
written about. Yeah, I don't think there's enough books written about Atlantis. I don't think it's a theme in movies and stuff that's explored enough. Like if you know, people would rather write about vampires or zombies or, you know, demons or, you know, I'm sitting here calling myself out because I write
or rock stars.
Rock stars, yeah. So I think Atlantis is a fascinating topic, and if you can take that in a new direction, you know, I think that's great. I love to take paranormal and supernatural lore like demons and psychics and stuff, and I like to totally twist them on their head and do something completely different. So when you're saying you're going to do something different with Atlantis, I'm all excited over here.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, you know, the thing about it is that I'm trying to pull people into that world, and there is a lot of concentration, tapping into coordinates and things, you know, and using ancient secret words, which I don't have names for them. I just say they call on the sacred word for guidance or, you know, earthquakes or whatever it's going to be. So there's a lot of things like that, but a lot of people don't realize that the ancient Atlanteans had a closer connection with spirit, more so than we do now. We're slowly awakening back to that. But they were also very hedonistic, too. So, therefore, when I first started writing this book, my husband was like, oh, my God, why are you writing a science book? I was so bogged down by the genre and what needed, quote-unquote, to be in it, I lost track of the story. So I let a couple of authors read it. Amy Brock McNew read it, and Dylan Cross read it. And he said, you know, we just don't know who we're supposed to root for here. They only read the first chapter or, you know, several paragraphs into it. And Amy said, you know what, forget that it's science fiction or fantasy or whatever it is you're doing. You know, they be true to the story. You know, you write erotica, bring that passion into the story. And she said, you've got some mesmerizing characters. I want to feel them. And so once I let loose of, okay, we got to call the Surya's home planet Antares 9, and we have the Galaxar 90 that, you know, he can view Earth from 39,000 light years away and hear and see things through buildings, you know, bring that in only when you need it. You know, if you've got history, sprinkle it in little by little. So I had to learn something very new. I was totally out of my element. I had restarted this book about four times.
Oh, wow.
So,
wow. My brother wants me to write a science fiction, and I'm just like, there's no way I can do that. So more power to you, because I just don't, you know, and I write romance erotica, and I have a hard time with that sometimes, but I can't even imagine writing a science fiction and everything that would go into it.
Yeah, science
fiction. So more power to you.
Fantasy would be easier than science fiction, I would think.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting when you have aliens and metaphysical and, you know, some technology too. You know, like the characters go from one island to another in an ultramarine pod, and basically it's a teeny tiny little submarine that you get into. It's spherical shaped. It can go down a couple of hundred feet. And so I have this scene where Kaluj and Surya are going from Poseidia to Arion. And because he's got a clandestine meeting he wants to see. Surya learns later on their way to the trip that Kaluj saw him come through the portal from Antares 9 in the Lyra constellation to Poseidia on Earth. So I don't know. And I don't know. But, you know, with the girl, you know, I have now gotten to the points where I've written the love scene with the girl and, you know, bringing some of that into it. So, again, it has some plot lines. It's got war, deception, lies, magic, you know, spicy scenes. It has everything in it.
Oh, that's so cool. That is really awesome. And it just sounds like a fascinating read, and you're not done with it yet, are you?
No, I'm only getting through chapter 16. I'm halfway through chapter 16, which means I'm technically a little over halfway through the book. And I would love to get it done by the end of this month so that I can get it to beta readers and kind of get moving on it.
I was going to say, you mentioned earlier that you're not a fast writer. How long does it usually take you to write a novel?
Probably about a year.
Oh, wow.
And that is at 92,000 words to 96-ish.
Wow.
I think with me, I know that's a long time. There are people who can crank out these stories in a matter of 90 days or 4 months or whatever. First of all,
right?
I work a day job, so I don't have all day. But the thing about it is the problem. My mind is not as creative as some others. I'm telling on myself again. I don't have as good a handle on my story. I've got a beginning, kind of got an end, maybe a few things happening in the middle, but I'm literally having to craft it as I go. Now, the end product, I'm hoping, is good. But
yeah.
I don't move fast.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know,
I don't either.
And, yeah.
I did with the Falling series.
You did.
But
you
the
really
following,
did.
Yeah, the Falling series, I cranked it out. Like, I wrote the first book in a week, but it was terrible. Remember how it was, Angie? It was terrible.
It wasn't terrible.
My other books, it was. With my other books, though, like the book that we're working on now, Remember the Stars, I just found a recording from 2016 where Corrine and I were talking about the plot. So I think we were discussing that book well before 2016, I would say probably 2015, and we're just now almost finished writing it. So
wow.
I'm a slow writer.
Well, I think George R. R. Martin is too. I mean, he had an interview with Stephen King and said, how do you write so fast? And I don't know, either George R. R. Martin is like me, he's just slow, or either he's being very calculating on when he's going to release books. I don't know what that is. And Stephen King,
Diana Gabaldon has that problem too.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
he's
Stephen King may have a really good idea.
Mm-hmm. No,
like,
I think that
I
think that George R. R. Martin, I think he's calculating. I think he's evil. I think he does it to us on purpose because he hates all his readers because he kills all the great characters. And so, yes, I think it's on purpose he does. I love George R. R. Martin, by the way, guys. I really do. I read Game of Thrones, wow, back in 2003, well before HBO ever thought, you know, and I just fell in love with his writing. So I do love to read fantasy. But, you know, like I was saying, sci-fi, I think, would be a lot harder. You know, I'm a Star Wars geek. I love Star Wars. But some of these Star Wars people, they get into the stuff in Star Trek, too. They get into it like they know every, like, inch of the ship, and they know all the things that propel it. So you were talking about your transport, you know. And it's like, you know, some people, when they write science fiction, they get into really heavy detail, you know, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've seen blueprints in science fiction books, you know, just showing everything. I mean, it's very techy. And I love that about science fiction writers. I could never do that. I would blow it so bad. So you got to, when you're writing science fiction, you have a completely different reader mindset almost that you're writing to. So that's got to be a little scary too, I would think.
Well, I think with mine, I think it's not as techy, so that would probably disappoint some science fiction. I think really what I'm really, I don't know, I think that's probably where that book probably will belong in mashups, and it will probably go under more mythology, and, you know, I don't know where I'm going to put that book. But, yeah, I think a lot of people would probably complain that it's not about spaceships and shooting things. I call it science fiction only because
mm-hmm.
you've got aliens and you've got... You know, you've got some things in it. You know, I all looked at The Witching Hour by Anne Rice, and they had put that book under science fiction. I'm thinking, oh, my God, why would you do that?
Really?
Probably because of the alien that one of the witches was carrying. You know, she was pregnant.
Huh.
And I'm thinking that is probably why they put that under science fiction.
That's
you had some pseudoscience.
Would have pegged that book as science fiction, and I never
would have.
No, I wouldn't have either. But I looked at the category of that one day on Amazon. I thought, oh, strange. Why? So I don't know. My book is not heavy techy, but it's probably more spiritual, metaphysical, that type of deal. So it almost seems like fantasy. But when you've got the aliens and coming from another planet, it's, you know, there you go.
Mm-hmm. And aliens is one of those things that's, like, hard to categorize. You can categorize it under paranormal, but you're right. Science fiction is primarily where aliens go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Scarlett, do you have a certain room in your house that you write in or a certain writing space? I kind of want to ask you questions that readers usually ask us, and that's
okay.
One that they usually ask.
Right. I write in a European ergonomically correct chair. I have a little work table that slides over my legs, and I'm ergonomically correct with my computer and the chair and the table, and I write in my living room. If I didn't, I would never see my husband. So what I do is we both hang out in the living room. It's set up for us to live in and write in. We watch TV, eat, talk, everything in there. We live in a little... You know, we live in a condominium. We wanted something simple. So my writing space is literally in the middle of the living room, seriously.
Mine is, too, on a reclining chair that we all like to call Mr. Huggy.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, we have a tiny, well, it's not tiny for what it is, but we have a small apartment, and I always write in the recliner because it's just where I'm comfortable.
Exactly.
That's the best
thing
to do.
How many books do you have out, Scarlett?
What now?
How many books do you have out?
Let me see. So I have Pleasure House. I have 4 novellas with it. I have Death by Design, Escape from... So 7... several novels. I think, Pleasure House, four novels, four novellas, and several short stories. Several short stories.
That's quite a lot of work. Quite a lot of work.
Yeah.
I just counted 22 titles total.
What?
How
now?
Many, Angie?
Wow. I just counted 22 on your Amazon page titles in whole.
Wow.
Oh, well, okay. yeah, that's more than I can. Sorry, I can't keep count of them. Yeah, so I guess I'm more prolific than I give myself credit for being, I suppose, on some level. Because I bought my first published Pleasure House technically in 2012. And the reason it says 2013 on there is because I went back and revamped some things with it. Didn't change the story or anything, but for some reason it allowed me to change the publication date, and I thought, well, since I've done that, I'll just put 2013. You can look back at my royalty statements that start in 2012.
That's the same year I started, but I think mine says 2013 too, because I did the same thing. Angie helped me revamp the first book, that was the same year I started. So we've been at this for a long time, and honey, I don't have that many books, so you write faster than I do.
Well, I'm not trying to be calculating or cunning either. I'm just trying to get things.
No, I know. Yeah, you got to just, you know, write what comes to you, and if you can get a book out, you can get a book out. That's, you know, I try to do at least a novel a year, and so far I think I've done that. So.
Yeah, I think you have.
It's a goal.
What was the question?
I was saying I try to get out at least a novel a year. Do you have
a novel
goals like that set for yourself?
Yes, pretty much. It's not like I'm trying to finish a series or a collection. Most of my things are really more collections than they are series. And I don't know why that is, but it just is. Probably if I get this book done by, you know, August, published by August or something like that, that will be the fastest I have ever written a novel, ever.
Oh, wow.
So that'll be the fastest. But, you know, I usually when I do full-length novels, I want them at least to be 92,000 and up if possible. I know Chuck Wendig had said, okay, 85 is a good one, you know, if it's reasonably sellable. Holly Lyle is probably back in the old traditional publishing mode. She said 92 is a sellable length. So I kind of, you know, go more on her standards. I know a lot of people like publishing shorter works. I think it probably helps that immediate gratification that so many people like, so they can get that out. They can get things out quicker, so they do shorter.
I just run out of words. We're a little bit over 75,000 words right now, and we only have 3 chapters left in the book, and I'm just done. You know, I think learning to breathe, I'm not sure if learning to breathe or the falling of hope was my biggest, but I think that was 85, and that's like my brain just kind of shuts off after 80,000 words. Just that's it.
Yeah.
Well, I think readers, too, they're very different than they were years ago. I think, you know, though I enjoy descriptive novels, and sometimes my fault is they're too tightly written. But I think readers, on the other hand, they want action, action, move, 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 move. They don't really care, in my opinion, or from what I gather, about really being pulled or sucked into a book as much as they just want to go, go, go. I don't know. That's kind of my impression.
I write books the way I like to read them, and I am one of those readers, although I can sit there and read a whole Diana Gabaldon book, but her details sometimes drive me insane, but I'm so hooked on the characters that I can't stop listening to the books because I do audio. But I write books the way I like to read them, and I'm one of those where if I know how a book is going to end, I want to get to the point, and that's what I do with my books. Like, if I think I was telling Rain, that's my sister, and we're writing this book together. I was telling her, I was like, I think at this point, our readers are going to figure out what's going to happen. So when I think that I've hit that point in writing, I try to wrap it up as fast as I can. So I get what you're saying.
Interesting.
There.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point. Yeah. Huh.
Like I said, I can't sit there and read a whole listen to a whole Diana Gabaldon. I mean, I love that series, but sometimes those details in her books are huge. Her books are huge.
Mm.
So
well,
sometimes those details I'm rolling my eyes at.
Yeah. I mean, Anne Rice is one of those. I mean, probably the modern reader wouldn't like her as much. She's got an old fan base, but I mean, I will say one thing with the Mayfair Witches. I've been reading on them for years, literally, and it's like she goes into a lot of detail. And though I enjoy some of that description, I think sometimes it can be just overkill, and it's repetitive. And that would be my gripe.
Yeah.
You know, I agree with you. Like, I love Stephen King and I love Dean Koontz and you know, but sometimes I get into a Dean Koontz book and it's like 2 pages on the description of an outside of a building. And I end up just kind of scrolling ahead because, you know, and it reflects in my writing, I think, because I've gotten better at description. At first I was very reluctant to write any kind of description because I didn't like to read 2 pages of one thing being described, you know, or a page or, you know, and I thought, well, it should be shorter. So I was writing like really short descriptions, and now I think I'm getting better. I try not to do more than a paragraph though. Maybe 2 at the most, because I just, as a reader, that's not what I want to read. I want to get onto the meat, like you guys said, but at the same time, these other writers, I mean, they still have a serious place in literature. It doesn't have to be the now version. You know, you read a lot of the classics and it's going to be more description, more narrative, you know, than quick action all the time. And that's what made those books really brilliant. So it's just hard to strike a balance between description and narrative and getting to the action, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think writing is one big balance. And I don't know that I will ever be totally confident in writing, because I think when you reach that point as far as confidence, you're going to lose sight and lose the balance if you're not careful. It's like you got to be aware.
I am so glad you said that, because I say that all the time. If you stop learning, if you think that you've learned enough and you don't need to learn anymore, then you're done with the craft. You shouldn't write anymore. You know, you should always be focused on making your last book better than your next book better than your last book. Doesn't mean the story has to be better, but your writing should always be better. So, yeah, I'm so glad you said that, because that's something I'm always preaching.
Yeah, that is a good point. I agree. So, Scarlett, you're working on your sci-fi, maybe sci-fi book. What do you have planned after that? Or do you just kind of focus on one book at a time?
I have some covers that I had purchased as pre-mades from Rebecca Poole from Dreams to Media, Design, and I may try to work on some stories to fit those covers so that I can use those. So you're probably looking at maybe a horror or maybe an adult romance, one of those. There's 2 covers I have done, and there's a third one that I'm going to go with it that I'm wanting to write and make it into a witch series or a collection.
Oh, cool.
I'm not sure how I want to do it. But I would love to write something about witches. I think that'd be just too fun.
That would be fun.
Absolutely.
Especially if you're a fan of Anne Rice. Yeah, that would be really fun.
So do you do that often? Do you purchase the cover sometimes beforehand and then, like, tailor a story to match that cover? Because I think that's really cool, actually.
I actually do. I didn't think I did it as much as I did, but come to think of it, yeah, there's been about three or four that I've done that way. And it will put the pressure on you to get it written. But, you know, Rebecca is pretty easy, so anytime I need anything, she's there. Jay, I haven't worked with quite as much, but, you know, I'm sure, you know, if you've paid fully for a cover, she, I think, would have no problem stepping in whenever you needed something and getting you what you wanted. I love Jay's artwork because some of it is just so neat. If you go onto Simply Defined Art, and you'll know what I mean when you see some of these covers. Mm-hmm. They're just really, really different. And if the cover that I bought from her has a totally different title and everything on it, but she said, whenever you're ready, I'll get all of that up to your specifications. You know, obviously, if I wanted to change something, I'd have to pay for that again. But I loved it the way it was. I just fell in love with it. And I thought, I don't know what I'm going to write with this. What do I want to write? And so I worked my brain a little bit and came up with my Atlantis story.
That's cool. It's yeah, like having a right prompt picture.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It kind of reminds me of flash fiction.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, Amanda has been pumping out the pre-mades, and there's, like, been at least three or four of them. I'm like, oh, I wish I had a story for that. I think I'm too chicken to buy a cover and say one day I'll write a story for it. I'm a little chicken to do that. I'm afraid it would sit there forever and I wouldn't write the story.
Well, that's what's pushing me to get this story done, because I don't want Jay sitting here for a year or two or three, you know, and then coming back to her and say, oh, I'm done now. You know, I'm sure she, you know, probably wants to sell a cover, get it done, and then put it in her portfolio, because mm-hmm. she has her group, and Rebecca Poole does this too. You know, when they like to show off what they've done for somebody, it just kind of validates it. And until it's done, they can't do that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, very much so.
Maybe I should buy one of those pre-mades from Amanda.
I know. I think you should too. So Amanda is Amanda Walker's our cover designer. We both use her and have used her for a while now. But you know, we always like to pimp out the people that help make the books come to life. So who are your cover designers again? Can you give us their names one more time so that our listeners can go check them out?
Oh, yeah, it's Rebecca Poole. It's Dreams, the number 2, and Media, Dreams to Media.
Okay.
And Jay Ahir, she's out of England, and her website is simplydefinedart.com.
Okay.
And there are some other people that I've seen do some good covers. I think and Sly Fox Cover Designs is one. That's another one that I like. And I had a couple of others, but I can't, their names kind of elude me for the moment. But I've got one from Nurture Your Books. I see a lot of books that Nurture Your Books hosts, and I love some of the artwork there. And I'm thinking, you know, I might have to try out some of those cover designers. Anna Spies, she's one who has some neat covers. It's S-P-I-E-S, that's her last name. Anna Spies, she does a really good job with that too. And Sly Fox Cover Designs, she's out of Australia. But she does some really cute ones.
Oh, good.
Really,
that's a good selection for people to go look up, definitely, you know. Who do you use? Do you use an editor or formatter that you want to also pimp out? Do you have a personal assistant?
I guess formatting and work like that, I use the husband for one of my authors for that. And so he's helpful with that. As far as an editor, Right now I'm using, I call her more of a proofreader than anything because she doesn't do line editing. She doesn't do developmental editing. And she's actually not doing a lot of formal editing anymore, but Angela Campbell was somebody that I use more for proofreading. I'm sure if somebody wanted to ask her, she might work out something. The worst she could say is no. For more heavier duty editing, I am seriously considering using David King Design or Editing. Dave King.
Yeah.
Yeah, he actually wrote a book called How to Edit Your Fiction into Print, something like that. And he can do different levels of editing so that you're not spending hundreds to thousands of dollars, but you might still end up spending $300 or $400 for a full-length novel. You know, if he does just a developmental edit, he will go through it and say, here's what I found so far. And so the more you have him do, the more he adds on.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people understand how expensive it is to be an author.
No, they don't.
It is. And I think sometimes if you are pretty decent with your craft or structure, if you can get some good beta readers to really point out things to you, you didn't hear, well, I think sometimes you can almost do with just a really good proofreader or a decent proofreader.
Yeah.
That's not what many people would tell you to do, but honestly, most of us are not going to ever earn back the money that we put into editing and all of that. We're just not.
Luckily, I have Angie.
What now?
I do hers for free. I do hers for free, Marissa's editing.
Oh,
thank God.
That's why.
Perks of having your best friend be a good editor.
Oh, that's right.
Most people do not know that the majority of indie authors do not make back the initial investment into cover, editing, formatting, etc. You have to work at it to get that money back. So, just remember when you're buying a book and it's, $2.99 or something, it's not because we're trying to upcharge you from all those 99-cent books. It's because, we put a lot of time and effort into what we do, and we also have a lot of investment in what we do. So, and then when you think about all the marketing and then all the time for marketing and for writing and everything like that, if you added it all up as a normal job, it would be unbelievable how much money we spend.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But thank God most of us aren't in it for the money.
Yeah.
I would say don't go at it with real high expectations. And I really believe some of these authors, and I'll be honest with you, I don't know where they get their fan base or how they got there. That's still a mystery to me, but it seems like some of these authors were already, even indie authors, were very well connected when they published their first book. They just seem to have this built-in network that a lot of indies just don't have. They don't have it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we say in industries like this and like in movies and everything, it's all about who you know, and that's so true, even in an indie author industry. Got to know the right person. And if you know the right people, you can really go somewhere. That doesn't mean that you can't work really hard at it, because a lot of people do. But, sometimes it does take knowing that right person to get there.
Well, I think if I had to give any writing advice too, and this sounds really horrible to say, but it's like if you don't write the tropes, you're not going to be read that widely. That's not to say you're not going to sell a few books, but, even with my erotica or my romance, my covers don't fit, the titles don't fit. It's like I don't have those adult romance looks that the popular authors have, like Pepper Winters. Was it Vi and Penelope? I mean, when you look at my covers, they look nothing like theirs. I don't have the titles like theirs. My books, unfortunately, I'll just say it, are so different or such off the beaten path that it's really difficult to get somebody who is willing to try me, even though the writing, I personally feel like, is very solid.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's,
you know, what?
Oh, well, like Words We Never Speak is an audio book, but it's difficult to get the people to listen to it because, and it's in the romance package, so I'm getting nothing when people listen to this book. And it's a very good story behind it, but it doesn't have the look, or it's not the trope, and which is unfortunate because
yeah.
It's a good book that doesn't get the listens that, let's say, some of the others will.
Yeah, and sometimes you do have to say, am I going to go with what's in my gut, or am I going to go with what's quote-unquote popular or the fad right now? And I say always go with what you believe, you know? But one of your covers that instantly grabbed me was the Lustfully After Ever. There's something about that cover that I just think is so beautiful, you know? It's a simplistic picture, but I really like it a lot, you know?
That is my first and only anthology that I've ever wanted to participate in, and it was produced by a two-dame production. They
mm-hmm.
have now since closed, and what their assignment was is they wanted modern twists on fairy tales, and they preferably wanted it from other countries. They said, we know everybody's going to be turning in Cinderella, Snow White, Sleeping Beauty. Please, if you can avoid that, because unless you think yours is really good and could be selected, you're probably not going to get in this anthology. So I mean, I'm going to tell you something. It's extremely difficult to find a fairy tale or a folk tale that actually converts nicely into a happy, uplifting, modern tell. You don't know how difficult that is. It took me hours upon hours upon hours to find
one.
Oh,
wow.
And I settled on one that's called The Enchanted Prince. It's from the Philippines. And so I took it as a modern retelling and called it An Enchanting Hideaway. And basically, you know, The Enchanted Prince is about someone who made a witch angry. She turns him into a monkey, and he has to lure the lover to say she loves him better than anything before he turns back into a human. So An Enchanting Hideaway, which is also available as its own short story, it's 99 cents, is basically a woman who is dumped by a rich man because she was poor and he was forced to marry somebody of higher status. She's sitting in the, you know, courtyard of a church or, in, you know, outside a church crying and unhappy. And this young man comes from the forest behind her and says, you know, why are you crying? What's going on? She, you know, they start talking. He says, come with me into the forest. And she's so taken by the look in his eyes and his demeanor, she follows him into this forest. And after 10 days, she has fallen in love with him. And there are some erotic scenes in there because it had to be erotica. So there are some very graphic scenes. And basically, you know, after 10 days, she falls in love with him. She says that she loves him totally, completely, better than anything on earth. And he whispers in her ear, do you believe in magic? And when she wakes up, she's in a hotel room. And he's dressed and he's, you know, on his computer, and he explains to her about what happened. So they end up marrying, and, you know, it's the happily ever after.
That's so cool.
But it was one of the 12 that got into that anthology.
Oh, wow.
That sounds really interesting.
Probably one of my favorites.
Yeah, I think I'm going to pick that one up after this podcast because that sounds so really good.
It's cute. And some of the reviews, if you look at the reviews on Lustfully Ever After, some of the readers have said it's some of the best collection of well-written erotica they've ever read.
Wow. Okay,
awesome.
Yeah, I'm totally going to check
cool.
it out. So, you know, before we're running out of time, getting ready to run out of time here, but real quick, something that we like to ask all the authors that we interview before we go is what tip would you give to, or advice would you give to a new author that is getting ready to publish their first book or thinking about writing their first book?
I would say get Holly Lyle's How to Think Sideways. Get a course in writing. Learn how to do dialogues, how to do scenes, how to do plotting. Learn all of that or get some good handle on it before you even start writing, period.
That's really good advice, I think. I think so, because I think it's important to learn the basics, obviously, you know. And
don't just go for it like I did.
No, you did. Gosh, you don't give yourself enough credit at all.
Well, I'm just thinking like first time here, first draft. You know, I didn't know anything I was doing. Angie had to come in and kind of teach me the way
to do it. Well, here's the thing. When you learn that craft and you put all that together enough to where you have a decent enough handle, don't think I still didn't read other books on the craft of writing, even though I had read a few of her clinic bundle books. But you will then begin to write your stories with a purpose. You will begin to question yourself, why are you adding this? You know, are you getting too much down this way, that way? You can write the book with clarity and purpose and ask yourself the important questions that need to be asked as you write.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's really great advice. So, Charlotte, we want to thank you so much for taking your time to be with us here tonight. I think it was fascinating to speak with you, and I've learned, you know, I love to learn from other authors, and I've learned quite a bit, but I do absolutely love that story about how you came up with your pen name. I think that's brilliant.
Well, I enjoyed it anytime. I enjoyed it too. Thank you so much.
Yes, awesome. Thank you for being on the show.
Yes, we have you at your website at www.scarletdarkwood.com, and that is Scarlet with one T. Do you have a fan group on Facebook or anything?
I do. I have Scarlet Darkwood Author on Facebook. I have @ScarletDarkwood on Twitter, and I've just opened up an Instagram account. So I'm on Instagram, Scarlet Darkwood.
Awesome.
That's great. Well, thank you so much.
What was your Instagram handle again? Sorry, Angie, I think it cut her off. What was your Instagram handle?
It's Scarlet Darkwood.
Okay.
On Instagram.
Okay, great.
Yes.
And everyone, that's Scarlet with one T. Just remember that, or you might get the wrong one. So thank you again so much, and we really appreciate it. We'd love to have you back sometime. Thank you.
Oh, I would love it too. Thank you. Good night.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Well, another one down, Ange. Who do we have coming on? Let's see. What's our next podcast? The 21st?
That would be, yes, the 21st, 1 week from today.
At
4
o'clock, same time.
It's going to be Ember Rain Winters. Yeah.
Awesome.
Ember Rain Winters. So, and it's Rain, spelled like your sister's nickname. So, really
interesting,
because we don't see that very often, do we?
Yeah, usually it's like R-A-Y-N-E.
Yes, exactly. So, that's really cool. I like that. So, Ember Rain Winters is coming to visit with us next week. And, you know, it should be just another fascinating interview. Great time talking to Scarlett tonight. I'm glad that she got to join us on the beginning of the podcast. We often don't get that opportunity to, you know, have them.
Yeah,
on
but
earlier.
We're thinking of switching up the format, so maybe it'll happen a little bit more often than not.
Yeah, we've kind of talked about switching our format. You know, the format that we have, we've had it for so long that you know, we're always up for a change, definitely. So,
yeah.
Do you have anything?
Don't forget, people, you can call in to these shows and speak with these authors. The call-in number is always the same. It's 646-668-8250. You may have to listen to the show while you're on hold. But we do want to encourage you to call and speak with these authors.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's always fun. And that's the thing that I love about the indie, being an indie author, is that you actually get to really connect with your readers. You know, you don't get that with the big five pub house authors. But at our level, you know, we get to really connect with our readers, and it's always fun to talk to readers. And other authors.
Definitely. And don't forget that Epilogues has a flash fiction contest going on. Can you tell people about that, Ange? Isn't that ending soon, or are we going to extend it?
It has been extended, but you know what? I have not extended it on the post itself. So I'll go and extend it right now. We're going to extend it out for a month. We've got one entry right now. I know some people have messaged me and said that they are working on their writing. You know, a lot of people are busy this time of year, of course, vacations and all that great stuff. So, you know, we want to make sure that everybody has enough time to enter that contest. It is a flash fiction contest. We're asking you to write a story of no more than 500 words based on the picture provided, which is an adorable little boy with some binoculars kneeling down in grass. So no more than 500 words. You can do any genre and submit your completed story to Epilogues at AngieMartinBooks.com. And we've got the full details are in the Epilogues Book Club on Facebook, and that is at bit.ly/epilogues_bc, as in book club. That's all lowercase. So go check that out, and we'll get that extended. So give you guys another month to get everything in there.
Awesome.
All right.
Okay, Angie, okay, I can go.
Sure, yeah.
I know what you're trying to say. So I'm at bit.ly/lovestoriesauthor, and you can find me on Facebook. Just search Marissa Oldham. I do believe I'm the only one. And I have a Facebook group called Marissa's Groupies.
Awesome.
Angie, what about you?
Okay, and then you can find me over at www.angiemartinbooks.com, which is not updated right now, so I'd rather you go to bit.ly/thrillingbooks. That's where you can find a list of all of my current works and anything upcoming. You can find me on Facebook in the group Angie's Conduits. Nice little group that we have out there. I like to give things away, so that should be enough incentive for you. And then you can find me on Facebook, author Angie Martin, Twitter. My handle's at Zombie Chica, ZMB Chica. And I think that's it. Those
You're
are the biggest
on Instagram,
place
you just don't remember it.
I'm on Instagram, but I don't know it.
Right. I got to teach you Instagram.
And then,
Instagram,
of course, you can find Marissa and I here every single Thursday night from 4 to 6 p.m. Pacific time. You can also find us on the occasional special podcast. Our next special podcast is actually going to be next week. We're going to have what's called the Super Friends podcast, a group of super friends.
Ooh.
There's a couple of us that are meeting up in Vegas. We all met online, and some of us hadn't met each other before, so it's going to be really interesting. Marissa won't be there, but hopefully she can join us on the phone, and a couple others that won't be there can help on the phone, and we're just going to have a great time talking about reading and writing and books. So that'll be our next special podcast next Saturday. Not this one, next Saturday.
All righty. Well, thank you to everybody for listening to the show tonight. We hope that you tune in next week. And if you have any suggestions for the shows or questions that you want us to ask the authors, please email Angie or myself, or message us on Facebook.
Absolutely.
My email is marissaoldhambooks@hotmail.com. Again, that's marissaoldhambooks@hotmail.com.
You can grab me at angie@angiemartinbooks.com or the Epilogues main email, which is epilogues@angiemartinbooks.com. And thank you again. We appreciate you guys listening.
All right. Have a good night. Bye.
Bye.